8, 6, 1, 0.
Welcome to the Radio Art Hour, a show where art is not just on the radio, but is the radio.
Oh, radio, radio. Uh-huh. Radio.
The Radio Art Hour draws from the Wavefarm Broadcast Radio Art Archive, an online resource that aims to identify, coalesce, and celebrate historical and contemporary international radio artworks made by artists around the world. Created specifically for terrestrial AM/FM broadcast, whether it be by commercial, public, community, or independent transmission. Come on a journey with us as radio artists explore broadcast radio space through poetic resuscitations and playful celebrations, subversions of the complex relationship between senders and receivers in this hour of radio about radio. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the Radio Art Hour and Wavefarm's Radio Art Archives.
This week on the Radio Art Hour, Wavefarm radio artist fellow Jess Spear will introduce you to Neighborhood Public Radio in just a moment, and later we'll hear from Earwax Productions.
I'm Jess Spear for the Wavefarm Radio Art Archive, and I'm happy to introduce this selection from the archives of the Neighborhood Public Radio Project. This long-standing project brought temporary radio stations to galleries, storefronts, and even the 2008 Whitney Biennial, using a hyperlocal, collaborative, experimental, and totally uncensored approach to radio that was critical of public radio, while also drawing inspiration from the early promise that it held. This selection is from a regular show presented by artist John Brumit called Catch and Release during the 2004 installation at the Southern Exposure Gallery in San Francisco. Let's hear it now.
We're back at the desk. Welcome back to Catch and Release. We didn't catch much out there, but I'm very pleased to present to you that we have plans. We're building, as we speak, a bigger net. That's right. That's probably for me. That's that truck I almost walked in front of about 5 minutes ago. So, Catch and Release. It's a program based, more or less based on the idea that our neighborhood right here is fascinating, and I'd like to present it in its various forms to you, the listener. So, as an idea, sending people out with a wireless microphone in order to increase the occurrence of live sound processing and transmission, I would have to say that has been the goal, largely. So, but as my transmitter's not quite so functional, we're going to go ahead and I'm going to present the first ever, thank you, wonderful, I'm all set up. This, I'm going to play a little piece for you called The Broadcast Bike, and this is a piece done with a bicycle with a piece of drain pipe attached to the bike and a contact microphone, and I rode around, and basically this bike sort of translates all kinds of topographic information into a sound piece. So, in essence, I'm riding a bicycle that's like a phono cartridge. So every bump becomes some signal. You get it. It's fun. It's great. So this is a rough mix, probably a rough mix. It's labeled as a rough mix, as we like to do in the industry, to indicate to ourselves that this is not to be broadcast. I'm going to let you in on a little secret of my own, which is that I sort of prefer the rough mixes. That's a live flute in the courtyard out there, isn't it?
Sounds good.
Yeah, wonderful. Sorry, I can't be there live, but you can hear it through the wall.
Thank you.
West Oakland over to San Francisco to Alamo Square Park, and my friend Mark Horowitz, who I believe will be on the show with me tomorrow, was serving free coffee, free coffee in Alamo Square Park, and would occasionally have lots of friends come by, and have former, I believe, associate director of this gallery making crepes, Lisa Ricci. And so anyway, I was riding my bike over to have some coffee and hang out with Mark, and I thought I'd do quite a bit of recording on the way. And at some point on this recording, I'm not sure exactly where it is on this mix, I realized that I was probably more effective trying to sell the homeless poetry book than I actually was able to engage people in some live public art. This is the broadcast bike is actually the third, is the piece you're listening to is the third incarnation of this topographical sound piece. So what you get, the first one was a Honda Civic, and I prepared the Honda Civic with a lot of percussive instruments, timpani drums, small snare drums, a small child's piano, an electric guitar with a cordless amplifier, and lots of pendulant, heavy objects suspended from the ceiling. So as I would drive and I would turn left or I would turn right, what you would end up with is this musical, improvisational production based on chance and based on potholes and ruts and stopping and starting and turning and whatever, just your average drive. So in essence, the aberrations in the surface on which we travel so often became more or less a celebration in terms of listening to the piece, because if it wasn't for the potholes and if it wasn't for the ruts, you would actually have no musical composition whatsoever. So the prepared Civic was
listening to Catch and Release on Neighborhood Public Radio.
Here we are. That's me giving the doing the station announcement from my bicycle right outside of the BART station.
We're listening to Catch and Release on Neighborhood Public Radio. Thanks for tuning in. Today we're going to go talk to Let's go check in with some tourists.
Have you seen new big sheep poetry books? Like, look them up?
How much is it?
It's $5. They sell
for sale. Oh, ooh, you know, $5. Well, that's probably, I got $2 for it.
So what's that for you? Well, how about a hoonie pack? It's the news in the coming.
I got a, this tube right here. Has marbles in it.
Marbles?
Yeah, so as I ride this bike around, it's going to turn on my amp, and there's a little thing on the end right there. So it takes all the potholes and the bumps and the cracks and stuff. Yeah, it's just little marbles and like some rocks and kind of nuts and bolts and stuff in it. But then, the better, especially for the guy like himself, well, you can see some moves in here itself. What do you call it?
Street sheet poetry book,
right here. Street sheet poetry book, only $5, if you're lucky.
Yeah, it is.
That's right. Yeah. They're going fast, going fast. Get your poetry book while they last.
What's your name?
Will. All right, come see Will. Will has your street sheet poetry book right here. How much is it? $5. $5 for your street sheet poetry book.
Oh, great.
Poetry by San Francisco's finest. All right, come get it. Come, don't everybody come over at once now.
As you can see, there aren't many people coming over. Yeah, but they are intrigued. I think they're just afraid. Not everybody.
Hey, don't be afraid. Now, this is good stuff in here. It's gonna blow your mind. Yeah, street sheet, poetry book, by San Francisco's finest.
Yeah.
Alright, only $5.
Well worth it, sir. Well worth it. Yeah, that's all right. Thanks.
Thank you.
Pacific sideline on Pacific. That last track was about 6.5 minutes. It was called 2 miles on Wolf Street. So that was right outside my studio in West Oakland at the time. The road chosen for that recording, specifically for its abundance of potholes and otherwise horrible condition. The rugged road aims for a great recording with a prepared Civic. Now you're listening to another track from that series. And this is called Cordless Guitar Through the Toll Plaza. We have about 5 minutes left with each other. You've been listening to the first installment of this program. We'll be on every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 6 o'clock. Hopefully the last Friday of the month, my hope is that we will have the wireless system worked out. We'll have a cyclist out there. That's right, for critical mass. Isn't that correct? Yeah, last Friday of the month, catch and release. So anyway, I'd like to offer to you, our listeners, a small list of participants who will be featured and providing their own work for this series. A lot of great artists. I have a catalog right here, and I'm going to read from this. Well, first of all, I'd like to say Michael Trigilio is going to ride a bicycle out of here, and he's actually going to order as many burritos as possible from all the local, sort of burrito trucks, what have you. And I think the bet is so far, well, we have a pool going here down at the office, and we expect that he's probably going to get about six burritos within half an hour. What do you think?
Six burritos in a half an hour? That's a lot of burritos in a half an hour.
Well, it doesn't mean he has to,
every 5 minutes.
He doesn't have to consume them all. He just has to order as many and receive them from the truck.
From different ones or the same?
Yes, they all have to be different burrito trucks. Different burrito trucks, same neighborhood. It's a race.
That'd be hard, I think.
I mean, if you're watching TV and all of the crap that's on out there, you need to stop and tune in. Tell your friends, 88.9, when Michael Trigilio rides a bicycle to order as many burritos from mobile cantinas as possible, we want you to be tuned in.
Yes.
Other people in this show, if I may.
Well, you know, Sarah Lockhart's going to be on in just, 3 minutes? 3 minutes till Sarah Lockhart's going to be on with the Visible Hand. Did you know that?
Well, we have Sarah Lockhart with the Visible Hand.
Yeah.
That's at 6:30.
Yeah.
For the last 2 minutes of Catch and Release, I'm going to tell you other people featured on the show called Catch and Release. Anyway, that Lee, always crazy with a microphone. Let's see, we have a...
We're removing noise as we speak so that your signal will be as noise-free as possible. So we are going to have a higher signal-to-noise ratio because of the processing that's going right now.
Perfect. Thank you. That's Sarah Lockhart giving us a technical update.
Always good news. There's remaining 8 minutes and 54 seconds of noise to be removed, and then there will be no more noise.
Perfect. So, other people featured on Catch and Release, if I may say, and it would be great if you would tune in for them, Norman Long, Conrad Lubell, we have Edward Sykes, we have Matt Valla, we have Wayne Grimm, Mark Horowitz, Spy Emerson, with some reports from Prague, Dolan Cleverly, and Joshua Churchill, Joshua G. Churchill. Anyway, thank you so much for tuning in and to this program, and you've got to stick around because Sarah Lockhart is up next with The Visible Hand right here on Neighborhood Public Radio, broadcasting live from Southern Exposures Gallery at 88.9. Thank you.
We just heard an episode of Catch and Release by artist John Brumit from the 2004 installation of hyperlocal radio station Neighborhood Public Radio at the Southern Exposure Gallery in San Francisco. To learn more about John Brumit and this project, visit the Radio Art Archive at wavefarm.org.
I'm Tom Rowe at Wave Farm, and next we will hear from Earwax Productions with David Lawrence, their 1990 work Virtual Paradise, the Reality Tape, featuring many voices recorded at Cyberthon, a 24-hour virtual reality event presented by the Whole Earth Institute in 1990. Virtual Paradise was the winner of the 1994 AIR Award for Innovation and Excellence, and is from the New American Radio Archives, that's at wavefarm.org.
I'm waiting for some kind of gear that I'm going to put on, and when I open my eyes, you know, I may be stuck inside this thing for days because I won't know, wow, is this like reality or is this virtual reality or where am I, you know? That it will look and feel and sound so real, like I'm here right now with you.
Ever since I saw my first virtual reality in 1970, 69, on the Santa Monica Pier, there was this amazing coin-op machine. It cost four quarters, and they had four adventures. Goggles were built into the machine. It had smell and wind, and the seat moved. And one of the experiences was a date with a girl. And it starts out, you go to her front door, and she opens the door, and it's all in 3D. You go out, and you go on a bike ride, and the seat jiggles, and you're holding the handlebars, and the wind's blowing through your hair. And she goes to a florist shop, and you go in with her in 3D. She holds out a bouquet of flowers, and you smell them. And then it ends up, of course, back at her doorstep, where she's just starting to pucker up goodbye, and then the curtain drops. So you put four more quarters in, and suddenly you're on a motorcycle going, and it smells like gas and oil, and your hair is blowing. And then the two other adventures were, you know, date, motorcycle, then a belly dancer. But then I didn't hear a word about this thing and it disappeared, and I figured it must have been a maintenance problem. You know, some guy had to come around and restock the vats of smell and all that, and it went away.
Reality. You know what I'm going to say. Reality. You know, real reality. Well, I could go on, but I'd like to say one other thing. And you know what I'm going to say. Reality is reality.
I happen to hold, along with the 15 million other species on this planet, that we didn't create reality.
Open your eyes.
Look at what reality really might be.
We thought reality was a fact.
This stuff.
What is reality?
I don't know.
Same thing with reality.
I think society is dangerous every time it assumes that reality is a fact and not an opinion.
Close your eyes.
What is reality? Well, sometimes I think reality is too heavy as I experience it in my day-to-day life. Reality seems like there's no escape, like this is my reality. I feel the pressure all the time, and then sometimes I think, well, what if I were to just, like, close my eyes and imagine this was all a dream?
Open your eyes.
Reality is what existed.
Something very solid.
At whatever time it existed. Within itself.
How do you make reality democratic?
That in itself would be another consensus.
Reality is the most democratic thing there is.
No, what we are is perceivers of reality.
Because you're making it up as you're going along.
Close your eyes.
This is all just one really long dream, and you wonder, is this really happening? Or is there a way to just make it all go away? The wheels of everyday life are spinning really quickly. And someday I'm gonna wake up, and this is just going to be a memory.
Open your eyes.
We make it collectively, simultaneously.
I actually think reality is something very concrete. I have less of a...
My sense is that reality is something that is here before we got here.
Sympathy with the idea that it's a mutual creation.
At all times, we're all voting.
I actually think there is something very solid.
Every time we think.
Yes, and no.
Close your eyes.
The reality wall. Sometimes when I'm, you know, walking across the Golden Gate Bridge on a Sunday morning, I think, yeah, well, what if I did just the reality wall, jump over the side? Then where would I be? What would happen? And what's stopping me? The reality wall.
Open your eyes.
What is reality? And in particular, has our culture...
In fact, it's an extremely elaborate dance of consensus and opinion.
Almost let go of.
Because you're making it up as you're going along.
Its roots in reality already.
Along with everybody else.
Close your eyes.
Darkest dreams.
When really good things happen to me, then I'm like happy to be here. When things are going bad.
Darkest dreams.
When things are going lousy, when everything turns upside down and suddenly you're on that downward spiral and everything is really dark and it's the darkest of human emotions that are staring you in the face.
Yeah, this is all a dream.
Is this really happening?
Darkest dreams.
Or is there a way to just make it all go away?
Yeah, this is all a dream.
Or what would happen if I really reached out and went for these
dreams? Darkest dreams.
Open your eyes.
Yes, if we can simulate our perceptions of reality to such a degree, yet knowing it's artificial.
And the best thing about this...
If our artificial simulations get better and better and better to the point where we say, well, is it real now or isn't
or
it?
Or LSD.
We have to ask...
Or... German epistemology.
Maybe reality doesn't have to do with how well you perceive something.
Is that it makes you understand that you're not necessarily right.
And the perceiving of reality is already a kind of a virtual reality. You see, we never see anything directly.
Because you're making it up as you're going along.
And that is because it forces us for the first time in many, many, many decades to look at what reality really might be.
Along with everybody else.
Close your eyes.
What makes someone a serial killer and not me? What makes someone president of the United States and not me? What is reality?
The reality wall.
Yeah, this is all a dream. What is reality?
The reality wall.
Yeah, this is all a dream. What is reality?
Open your eyes.
See, I mean, it's just like mind-boggling. I mean, how has technology affected our reality? It's like unfathomable. I mean, where do you begin? I mean, the wheel like really changed things, you know. And I think it's just been an upward spiral ever since then.
For me, it seems to be right now the working metaphor of the times. It's a means of translating almost kind of a universal language for translating many different forms, many different cultures, many different ideas into something that's expressible.
around you, swirling forms, swirling forms.
Cross time, cross space.
All around you,
cross space.
Swirling forms, swirling forms. Imagine that you're in a virtual space.
Cross time, cross space.
And all around you, there's like swirling forms.
Swirling forms.
Kind of like you're in the middle of a dust storm. And what you can do is you can reach out and you can sort of grab a swirling form. You can pinch it, make little swirling forms, swirling forms. And whenever you grab one, instead of swirling away and dissipating, it kind of sticks there for a while. All around you, swirling forms, swirling forms.
Cross time.
Perceiving.
Cross space.
And if you start grabbing them repeatedly, they become more and more permanent
forms.
And if you keep on doing that enough, you end up with like this sculpture around you.
Time goes on.
And then as time goes on, you can pinch it and make little detailed adjustments to it. You can pinch it. And then at the end, you end up with this world.
Swirling forms. Swirling forms. Cross time.
Perceiving.
Cross space. Cross space.
All around you. Swirling forms, swirling forms.
Cross time,
perceiving.
Cross space. Cross space.
You can make something vast. You can make a planet. You can make a city. And then you can go inside it. And call around. That's really neat. I think that people's imaginations are not limited by, gee, should I have gotten off there? Is there a way to get from there? I can't cross over by this point. I think we're stuck.
The notion that I've come up with sort of runs like this. It's that our world is networked together using small mouth noises, which are speech and then electronically transmitted, or symbols for small mouth noises. This is not a wide band of communication, the small mouth noise thing. So what would it be like if we could use the VR technology to make language something you can see? You see? Move language from the realm of something heard with the ears to something seen with the eyes. In space. Okay, so here's the VR fantasy. We take the ordinary parts of speech and or of the articles, the gerunds, the adjectives, so forth, that you've memorized in your head. We take the ordinary parts of speech, we classify them by category, and we assign a geometric assignment to each one. Can be random. So then, if I were in this VR environment or this electronic setup that I'm envisioning, as I spoke to you, over my shoulder, there would be, in space, a kind of Tinker Toy-like construction. A kind of Tinker Toy-like construction. Tinker Toy-like construction. And the construction of my gimmick. In space, a kind of Tinker Toy-like construction.
Syntax.
Can be random. Which would be rippling along under the rules of English grammar and the construction of my syntax. Well, is this just one more exercise in media deconstruction and language reformulation? No, it's something much more profound than that, because if you could see what I mean in a fairly profound sense, you would be me. Because point of view is everything.
In space.
I don't believe any of that stuff. You mean the post symbolic communications? It's a wonderful fantasy, as fantasies go. Language is not that simple. It takes a long time to evolve. It's probably the main thing we've done so far. I just don't think you can construct it.
What does he know, Nihongo wa?
Certainly when people talk about virtual reality sex, that's the biggest question on their mind. It's like, well, is this going to replace human contact? It's like, no. I mean, you know, just like a vibrator is not going to replace human contact, neither will virtual reality sex. Virtual reality sex is virtual sex. It's not real sex. I don't think it's designed to be real sex, much like going to watch a Hollywood film is not like you're living in the movie. I mean, you don't move to Venice because you see death in Venice. I mean, you know, you're just seeing a movie, and the same thing is true with virtual sex.
click.
I often wish that there could be some kind of, you know, electrode that I could put on my brain that would hook me up to some video monitor where this picture would suddenly appear on the screen and I could show people and say, see, this is what I'm talking about. And they'd say, oh, yes.
7-2-0-2-5-4-2-7. Why don't you give me your list?
Jack 7, in or jack 7, off?
It's a boy talking.
And the reality is going to be a girl made of polygons. So I don't think it's going to be a, you know.
Perfectly mutable, controllable lover.
I mean, do you want like a sensorial breakdown of sexual experience?
Let's go press home and do it.
It's very much a boy talking.
This is the first like hard call porno applications call.
It's easier to act on. Drag.
Because we can do it better on the phone.
Enter. Open. Please click on.
It's a wet dream come true.
Press.
Press.
There's lots of possibilities. Okay, you have, you know, the fantasies that are in your mind, right? Let's say you're thinking some kind of thought. It's really hard for you to convey exactly what you're seeing in your mind's eye to somebody else. Okay, now you've got it in your mind. It's a sexual fantasy. On the other end of the spectrum is actually going out and doing it, right? You either can fantasize about it, or you can actually do it in real life.
It depends.
Okay, I want it to be me, and I want it to be, you know, a guy with really long hair who's really buff.
If I talk away the goggles and I just close my eyes and think of something all by myself.
Okay, now I want to kind of draw out this kind of space alien babe that I also want to be there, who has this like really long, like 10-mile tongue.
Well, I imagine there is a fine Cyberman waiting for me.
And, you know, hands like velvet and all these things.
Bachelor number two. Question for you.
You don't have to be you.
If you could see me in any virtual space, what space would that be? Describe it to me, please.
In VR sex, you could be a chair. You could be a dildo. You could be the bed. You can have, you know, 3 breasts and 10 penises and 5 heads and 8 arms and, or, you know, or look like something completely inhuman or something out of Star Trek.
I mean, you want to be.
Virtual sex. I mean, people just cannot get enough. They cannot get enough of something that doesn't exist. I mean, it's mind-boggling.
Drugs, entertainment. Gee. Drugs and entertainment pretty much cover it.
This is a very, very dangerous drug we are messing with. We've got no idea how dangerous the drug is. This is a very, very dangerous drug.
You know, people have been doing VR for about 125,000 years. They just called it taking psychedelic drugs.
What are we afraid of? Why are we afraid of the unknown? The problem is fear. It's not the technology. The problem is fear.
Headed out of control. It's a massive juggernaut headed down a very steep grade.
God forbid,
this isn't that.
The problem with technology is that it's a living organism. It has its own world. It has its own ways of getting its work done.
This isn't that.
It's got to get into your skin. Get into your coffee.
It is a conspiracy. The utterly unpredictable and the terrifying, the most terrible thing.
Good or evil.
I'm not going to take it anymore.
It's not a moral holiday. It's just another technology.
Is there a danger in people using simulation?
We don't want this to fall into the hands of the jerks.
Is there a danger?
Perhaps this is the new drug which we have to look into now.
This is going to happen.
There's no doubt about it.
It's happening. It's going to happen. And I'd kind of like to know where it's going to fit into my idea of play and my idea of fascism. Mind control,
fascism,
mind control.
What are we afraid of? What we've got happening in this society is we're alienated by information, we're alienated by feeling like we are out of control of our own lives, we're out of control of technology, and we're afraid in a nameless, abstract kind of way.
We don't want this to fall
out of control.
Military telepresence is going to be one of the first abuses a lot of people will encounter. There'll probably be people in Africa. And there'll be a, you know, the tank comes to your village and there's nobody in it. The guys who are running it are somewhere else.
When you think about it, that's to be expected. Wherever reality is being pursued, think about that. You know, to the kids and to the, you know, the low income like that. Think about that. I mean, within 10 years, the idea that a kid, a young human being, didn't have iPhones. Be like being naked. Think about that. I truly believe that one of the great hopes of cyberpunk and cyber thon and cyber trash and cyber, you know, real, you know what I'm going to say. Think about that. I said it to you 5 times already today.
Shouldn't have said that, I guess.
Reality. I've rambled enough, huh? Reality.
Now, some of you out there are saying, well, what has this got to do with virtual reality that they're going to tell us so much about? The secret is it's all virtual.
Time travel. Asynchronous conversations. Understanding time, space. The experience of art is in real time. It's in the here and now. Time travel. Asynchronous conversations.
What could you do about it with VR?
Telepresence. Gee whiz, art is time travel.
The thing that virtual reality holds out to my mind is the ability for one person to show another person the contents of their imagination.
It transmits understanding across time and across space.
And this is something so powerful that we can barely find a frame large enough to include it.
Carvings and sculptures and houses,
oil
and temples,
paints,
plays and symphonies.
Working in wood and marble and steel.
Are asynchronous conversations
entirely satisfying
between the artist and the person who's experiencing the work? Time travel. But the experience of art, asynchronous conversations, is in real time. It's in the here and now. Understanding. And in that way, art itself is telepresence. Time. Space.
Let's consider what will be the content of the virtual world after millions of people are sharing it all at once and changing it together. What's left there? Well, what would emerge is like this shared archetypal territory. The deities will be what's shared between us in the virtual world.
In your fantasy life, you can really live dangerously. You can take lots of chances, and you can take lots of risks, and you don't have to pay any price because it's your fantasy. In real life, you know, that's not always the case. Fantasy serves its very own special purpose, and I wouldn't trade that for anything.
You just heard Virtual Paradise, the reality tape by Earwax Productions with David Lawrence, broadcast by New American Radio.
A6089. That was the Radio Art Hour, mostly put together from the work of Wave Farm Radio Art Fellows. Go to wavefarm.org for more information about the radio art you heard featured on the Radio Art Hour. The preceding show was recorded at Wave Farm's WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.